Now, it's important to get the right level of technology. From a point of view of the architectural side, our suggestion is that you go with the local, materials and the local form of construction. Lots of people will tell you that people who live in villages are going to be comfortable living in the style of house that they've lived in for many years. However, the one thing we should make sure is that the structure supporting those houses is sound. And it's not that hard to get the structure sound to cater for any form of architectural style that's been in use. We need to think first of all about the non-structural components and decide what level of serviceability we need for those, what length of period we want them to be operational for, and how to go about achieving that. This is really an architectural question, so I'd leave it to my architectural friends to think about that one. But from the engineering side, we need to think through the questions which affect the structure. And I'm not going to go through in detail through this slide, but I simply want to make a couple of points to you. The principles of engineering design are common across the world. They don't change just because you go from a developed country to a non-developed country. What changes is the level of probability that that structure will fail under the loads that are likely to occur on it. We need to think through what is the design life, or if you like, a reference period for that particular structure. And I've suggested here that 25 years for a normal house is probably a reasonable design life from a structural point of view. That'll lead to an annual probability of exceedance. I'm sorry to use engineering terminology, which will lead to a probability of exceedance of around about 0.1. Now, before everyone gets too upset and says, whoops, that means there's a 10% chance this building's going to fall down, that's not true. There's only a 10% chance that the loads will be exceeded. You have also the strength of the structure itself fighting against it. So by defining these things clearly, engineers will have a starting point on how to have consistency of design. The load combinations, the permanent loads, the imposed loads are well set out in standards, either international standards or Australian standards. The wind loads are well documented now by Standards Australia for all parts of the Asia-Pacific area. There's a very handy reference document there, HB212, which gives us the reference material we need. Earthquake loads, not quite so easy to assess, but there's a lot of data on earthquake loads, particularly around the Ring of Fire. So we can get reasonable assessments of earthquake loads, and similarly to tsunami can be assessed on location to the sea, and flooding, local flooding, can also be assessed. Now, I'm suggesting that these things need to be well defined across the region in advance, so that when people start to do detailed designs on a location by location basis, they have the data all there in front of them. Now, this is the format that we've come up with for producing this data. This is just a generic loading summary, and I'm obviously not going to go through it in detail, but let me point out the parts that are in red. Those are the parts which would vary on location to location. They can be determined by engineering professionals ahead of time and agreed, and once we've agreed on those, it then becomes a fairly easy process to design our structures for resilience. I'll just pause for a moment to look at what's there. We've got obviously the locations, which are going to vary, the building types, the design life, which I've already discussed. We need to look at the type of soils it's sitting on, the loads, the imposed loads. The wind load is a variable because it changes across the region. The earthquake load is a variable changing across the region. And the tsunami risk is variable. Once we've decided those for a particular location, it's then fairly easy to work out the loads on a typical house. It's a really easy thing for an engineer to do. Now, once we've got the loads, it's then very easy to come up with some details. And this can be done also in advance. It can be done from the comfort of offices here in Australia. We come up with forms of fixing of roofs with cyclone washes and the like where appropriate. We can work out ways of holding down the structure, the roof structure, with roof framing fixings and the like. We can work out the load capacities of these fixings. Here's some load capacities on wall bracing, a different sort of wall bracing, some subfloor tension bracing, and some subfloor compression bracing. Now, all these are just standard components that can be plugged in to village housing very, very easily. Now, I'd like to talk about three case studies where Partner Housing has employed these principles. The first one is in Papua New Guinea, where our partner is Vision for Homes, and they've been building up there for a number of years. More recently, we've assisted them over a three-year period to build 12 houses, in addition to the other houses that they're building. And you can see the type of house that we're looking at there. This is the data sheet for that project. So it spells out the loads which would be on those houses. Therefore, the designers can select the appropriate details from the standard details, communicate them on drawings and in training material to Vision for Homes, and they get built into the structure. The second project is the Cook Islands project that Ifti and Esther spoke about this morning. And I won't go through the details of it, but it's basically a roof anchorage project where we've provided anchors adjacent to houses so that the house and the roofs can be tied down as a cyclone approaches. Earthquake isn't an issue in this area, but cyclone is. And the good thing about cyclones, of course, is you do get some advance warning. We've developed a means of testing those anchors with a site proof load tester. Basically, it's a beam, 10-to-1 ratio. You load it up with cement bags and you can actually work out what sort of load those anchors can resist. It's a very good site control tool. And here's the standard loadings for that area as well. Once again, you can see that the main area here is strong cyclones, which has put the cyclone loadings right up, and that's the sort of load that we would design those anchors and roof ties for. Once again, can be worked out in advance. The third one I'd like to talk about is a community building in Buri and Solomon Islands. We were approached by the local our local partner there, the North Renonga Community Association, to give them some assistance on a community building that had been designed by the government architect, but due to needing to relocate it, they had to redesign it. So they asked us for some assistance there, and this is the loading calculations that we used in that area as well. Now, that brings me to the main area that I'd just like to concentrate on for a few minutes. As I've said, architectural design varies from location to location and different cultures, different countries and so on. But engineering design can be worked out in advance from here in the comfort of engineering offices in Australia. And I'd like to urge the Shelter Reference Group to think very seriously about formulating a policy and documenting that policy on what the sort of loads are would be across the Asia Pacific for village housing. If we were working in the city, we would use the local building regulations. But we're not working in the city. People have never heard of building regulations in the rural villages. So we need to have, I believe, a coherent, consistent policy formulated by the Shelter Reference Group. In order to bring that about, I'd like to suggest that the Shelter Reference Group form a working group. A working group of few engineers, advised by a few architects, but whose purpose is to come up with these standard loads which we can apply whenever we're doing a development or a disaster project. The third point is where building regulations are enforced, then we would go with the local building regulations. No question of that. In Australia, you build to the regulations. In large cities, you build to the regulations. What we need to do there is make sure that they are enforced, but we don't need to change them. But on the other hand, when we're talking about rural villages in developing countries, particularly in the Pacific area and to some extent the Asia area as well, then we need to basically formulate sensible policies which take into account the fairly short lifespan of the structures. And I'd like to suggest that the approach that I've presented in this paper be along the lines that we adopt. I'd like to leave it there if I could, and I'm happy for some questions. Thank you.